l'ingénue, they're applauding you for the way you make an entrance at the proper cue. As you turn and pose in your pretty clothes, the people seem to know you're a star. Little ingenue, I'm applauding too, quite impressed with every gesture you're about to do. Your dramatic flair and your savoir-faire confirm the big attraction you are.
Has the talent scout never come about? Did that newspaper contest leave your picture out?
Change your name, little ingenue. There are fellows who would be proud to play a leading role supporting you. Either way you choose, promise Dad and Mom they'll never lose their little ingenue. Fellas who would be proud to play a starring role supporting you.
Either way you choose, promise Dad and Mom they'll never lose
their little
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstead Show, the radio show about comics. I'm joined by Colin Upton, and
Hello.
On the phone we have the very talented Mark Kalasniko. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, thank you
we
very
gotcha.
Much.
There we go. So that was Little Ingenue by Johnny Mercer.
That was very lovely.
Nice. It's a low tempo thing. It's a quiet way to start the show. I kind of like it.
Mm-hmm.
It starts it out on a jazzy, low-key vibe.
Yes.
Now, you sent me a request of three artists, Johnny Mercer, Bobby Darin, and Chet Baker.
Yes.
Why those artists? Like, certain type of, like, I guess, old standard jazz?
Yeah, basically that's it. Yeah, I just love the old standards, and all three of them have a really nice, sort of mild, cool way about them that I enjoy very much.
I'd also downloaded some Dean Martin, but I think he's a little more...
I like Dean, too.
The Dino. So you're the creator of three very strong graphic novels, the most recent, Mail Order Bride.
Yes.
Before that, Why Did Pete Duell Kill Himself?
That's right.
And before that, but recently
collected.
Collected, thank you. Thank you, Colin. Alex.
Yes.
And I guess Pete Duell is kind of a prelude to Alex.
Yeah, that's when Alex was a kid, yeah.
Including a brief appearance of Bernard, or a mention of Bernard, his
friend. Yes, exactly, yeah.
So, all three of these books, I want to discuss all of them. I kind of want to discuss where you come from as an artist, because it's interesting. I was doing research for this show, and I couldn't find very much information on you.
Mm.
All I could get was that you worked for Disney.
Yes.
And you
did.
You did.
Yeah, okay. I'm not working with them anymore.
Okay. and you have these three books. And that's
right.
pretty much all I could find out. So you're kind of an enigma to us. Especially that, judging from your books, you're a BC boy, too.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm from Trail, British Columbia.
That was the presumption I got, because I couldn't figure out where in BC it was, and then one of my friends who owns Pulp Fiction Books in town, he said, it's Trail.
Mm-hmm.
If you know a trail, it's Trail. Like, you look at it, and it's Trail, every little part
exactly,
of it.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
When creating your books, do you find it important to keep that roots of yourself, of where you come from?
Depending on, like the first book, especially like Alex and that, yeah, the roots of Trail were very important. And then Mail Order Bride also, and Pete Deal. Matter of fact, all three so far have been based in homes. So I think it's sort of like I start with where I'm from, and then my next book I'm working on right now is set in Los Angeles. So sort of like now I'm spreading out where I'm living now. So it's sort of like, yeah, the roots are very important.
Another book. I was going to ask if you have another thing in the pipeline.
Yeah, I'm working on a huge epic right now that I'm still in the midst of. I still got about 2 more years left on it. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's but it'll be Alex again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The return of Mr. How do you pronounce his last name?
Kalinka.
There we go. And it's interesting. There's something that I kind of equate reading Alex to, especially with the innocence of the childhood and then the kind of like the struggles of the artist going through. Kind of reminds me a little bit of some Bukowski's work.
Oh, yes. I love Charles Bukowski.
It really like, especially the very similar usage of names, which is slightly different.
Yes, yeah, so actually, my brother, who's also a Charles Bukowski fan, introduced me to Charles Bukowski. And matter of fact, even when I first came up with the idea of Alex, it was almost like I said to myself, I'd like to do a Charles Bukowski who's living in Trail. So that's sort of like how it went. So that's sort of like the beginning germ of the idea.
That's funny, because that's kind of what I thought, you know, beyond just an artist who's drinking himself, you know, to death almost. There was still that kind of, that internal struggle I see, especially with why did Pete Duell kill himself? There were some similarities to Ham on Rye for me.
Oh, is that right? I read Ham on Rye a long time ago, so I'll be honest, I can't remember it. So I can't tell the comparisons.
Well, the comparison, I'll flesh it out now. It's Ham on Rye. It's about Bukowski's childhood to teen years. And the style he writes it in is very much growing throughout the book.
Yes, yes.
So the storytelling in Pete Duell is very similar in that kind of, it has that, especially the younger parts of it, has that very open, wide-eyed, doe-eyed, I guess, expression. And it still has that young feeling to it, where it's a different type of storytelling than it is in Alex.
Yes, yes. Well, also, too, it's true with Pete Duell, also, he does grow up. You sort of see him in kindergarten and then go to about the age of 10 or 11, you know, or maybe just starting junior high school, but the last story. So there is that sort of watching a young, this person grow up, through the different stories.
And all the kind of different challenges that he faces in his childhood and how like that's kind of created what is Alex later down the road.
Yes, exactly. Well, the thing is that with Pete Duell is that I wanted just to sort of deal with that idea that, like with the idea of the Pete Duell character killing himself, I remember that as a child, and it was like, for me, I grew up with not a lot of problems in my life, so this was the first time I ever heard of like a suicide, and I always thought he was my favorite actor, and I thought, why did he want to do it? Why would he kill himself? And so the theme of that played in my head, and then when I wrote this, I sort of played the idea that, okay, why would somebody kill themselves? And then you sort of see through his existence as problems build and build and build, that gradually a character can become, the innocent of child can gradually become more and more eroded and more as problems and life and everything comes about. And then maybe, who knows, you know what I mean? That kind of thing where the character becomes very depressive.
Well, I was wondering, just how autobiographical is your work, Alex?
I do try. For the Alex stuff, I do what I do is I take parts of my character and then I really push for overemphasis. Like for instance, I'm not bad as alcoholic as Alex is. I mean, I won't drink I like a good drink, but I'm not blackout drunk and stuff like that. I will take stories and I will build them up. I also will take other people's stories and then put them in to help make a point come across. So it's like it's semi-autobiographical, and then with the glory of fiction, you can go and play it, to the max.
I think that kind of stays, kind of rings of what I was talking before with Bukowski, maybe some of the other beat stuff, of kind of taking your story and throwing some more into it.
Oh, I love that kind of thing. To me, that's the beauty of fiction, and also it's fiction then too. That's the fun part, because life always doesn't sometimes wrap up nicely. So it's always nice when you're writing to, I heard this story once. Well, I even say, for one example, in Pete Duel, there's a scene there where the Alex character gets beat up in the bedroom by the bully. Mm-hmm. That never happened to me, but it happened to a kid I knew. So I said, well, that'll work perfect for the story. So I put that in. So it's that kind of thing. It's like using things to help make your point come across.
Now, I think I'm going to ask questions about your early art experience and kind of get to, what created you to create the works, I guess.
Okay.
That's a mouthful way of saying it. What were you into as a youngin'?
Oh, when I was young, I always liked comics. I was very much into comics from a very young age. Matter of fact, it was sort of like the first thing that I ever was able to sort of like read. You go to school, you start learning how to read, you're doing your primary books and all that stuff. And then I remember one day as a kid, I had these comics around. I remember, I'd always look at the pictures, and I remember being stunned when I finally understand the words. So I said, well, this is fun. And so I began, so it was comics were always the first. I always loved the comic book format and enjoyed it very much as a kid.
Were these comic book comics or newspaper comics you saw?
Both. Actually, both, but also comic comics, too. I remember, I had all the... I was very big on Carl Barks. I loved Donald Duck, so I had Donald Duck, and then also had Mickey Mouse, and even comic books based on TV shows, like Lassie or Flipper and stuff like that when I was growing up. So, I liked all that kind of comic art.
See, I've been looking at your style, which I like a lot, and I've been trying to figure out what it reminds me of, and sometimes just I think of it like a New Yorker type cartoonist.
Mm. Well, that's a nice compliment. I really don't. I guess it's just sort of like my style is. It's interesting how to explain style. I guess it's just like right now. I'll just use the example. Like the book I'm working on right now, I'm doing very detailed. So I'm really rendering, and I'm trying to do something that's much more taking you around and showing you something. But then, like with Alex, as you see, it's much more. It's more simple line. It's more, flatter looking. And matter of fact, I did a small combo called SOS, which is also very flat, very stylized, very design oriented. And then with Pete Duel, I just go more realistic, especially in like the Pondere story where you see that waterfall. I want to again take you someplace where you can really, just like you're seeing detail and you really want the reader to be in that particular place.
You can say a lot with the line. It reminds me somewhat of Al Hirschfeld.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, he's one of the greats. I mean, his line work is just gorgeous. I love it. It's beautiful, beautiful stuff. As well as his sense of caricature is just wonderful.
What kind of artistic education have you gotten?
I went to a school that's now gone called David Thompson University Center. It was in Nelson, British Columbia, which is about an hour's drive from Trail. And it was a school that lasted a very short period. I'll say 5 years, but it might have even been less. And there I was introduced to everything. It was a very great little school, very nice, and it had everything, painting, sculpture, ceramics. Oh, it was just a wonderful, charming little place. And, very, Nelson, if you know anything about it, it's where a lot of the hippies, draft dodgers and stuff ran to in the 60s. So it had a really nice sort of feel to it, very artistic, very free place. So that was where I started really my art education there. I mean, I was doing art all my life. I mean, like I said, I started with comic books. I was doing my own comics when I was a kid. I went to art classes in high school and that kind of stuff. But really my art education started at David Thompson. That's when I started seriously pursuing art. And then from there, when I came to California and I studied at the California Institute of the Arts in Valencia, California, which is where they were. One of the programs in the school is character animation. And so that's where I was learning character animation in hopes of getting a job at Disney Studios. So. So that's where I went there. But the beauty of CalArts is a multidisciplinary school, so it has dance, music, writing, everything, and it's a very, very appealing school, and it really opened my mind. It actually, not only did I get from the animation, but I started to understand fine art, and I understood, you know, I started to see different ways how art is related to, oh God, you know, society and, you know, sociology, psychology, everything. This is a very broad education of how art is not isolated to one thing. It connects with everything. So it really opened my mind to different ideas. And I think in a way, the type of books I'm doing now was because of that, because it showed me that comic books, you know, I didn't really talk about comic books, let's just say, but showing me art that can do many different things. And I said, well, with my comics, I can do the same.
So were you tempted to try any of the other disciplines?
I'll be honest, at the time, no. I was really caught up on trying just to do the animation, because it was actually a very heavy-duty program, and once you get into it, you it's your whole life there. Anybody who's gone to CalArts, they would tell you that those 4 years, you're just, all you do is concentrate on making your film, and just you're just working away there. So now, as I'm older, I go, God, I'd like to go back and, you know, do like music or dance or acting and that kind of thing. It'd be very interesting because they'd all help with my artwork. But at the time, I was just too locked into the animation. But like, luckily, the school also offered other classes where you'd study, like, you know, it's called critical studies. So that way, it would open up the other arts to you.
Now, in the artistic process, when was it that comics became something that you wanted to pursue? Was it kind of like a post-animation exercising of demons, or?
That's an interesting question. It's sort of like comics were always there. I mean, I was back when I was in high school, I used to do my own comic strip, and I even sent it. And when I graduated from high school, I didn't want to work or anything. So I said to my parents, can I try for, you know, 6 months to try to sell my own comic? And I had a comic strip, and I sent it out to every syndicate, every newspaper in both Canada and the United States, trying to get it, you know, sold. It didn't work out, but it was a fascinating experience. And actually, what's funny is that's where the Alex character was created, is that it was Alex and he had a brother, and they was more like a Karl Barks adventure story, you know, where they go to different parts of the world and solve a crime, you know. And then, so comics were always a part of my existence. But then once I started work and then I went to school, the comics sort of passed, you know, into the back, and I started getting into the animation and stuff like that. But then what I found was that I guess I was missing with animation, it's a team process, and it's also very, you work with a lot of other people. It's a lot, I find it, and it's also, especially at the time, and I mean a lot of time, it's that it also has a very, you know, you're doing a lot more child things and stuff. It's more, you know, cute things and stuff, even though there's animation that's dark. But I just didn't, I started not enjoying it, and I sort of said, well, you know what, I want to try to do something more personal, and the comic book came back into my life, and because I could feel that I could handle this, I can work better, by myself, and I can just create what I want to create, and also not have to worry about, like, you know, getting a team of people together and, you know, create, you know, because animation's a very labor-intensive, art form.
I'm gonna take a momentary musical break.
Sure.
We're about 20 past, and I want to follow up that more questions about animation.
Sure, no problem.
And we have a whole slew of questions for you. So I'm going to play Bobby Darin.
Oh, great.
Beyond the Sea.
Oh, I love that. It's one of my favorites.
I loved the movie. It was good.
Oh, I never saw the film. I heard that Kevin Spacey was a little old for it. And he also sang the song, so it kind of disturbed me.
he did a better job than Joaquin Phoenix did in the Johnny Cash movie. Also,
oh, is that right? That also disturbed me, too, because I like Johnny Cash, too.
I love Johnny. Who doesn't love Johnny?
Yeah, he's great.
Okay, so I'm just going to put you on hold for that, and then we'll come back in a couple minutes. This
Very
is Mark Kalasniko. Did I pronounce it right?
Yes.
Excellent. And this is CITR 101.9 Ink Studs.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that you're sailing somewhere beyond the sea. She's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond the star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt my heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet beyond the shore, we'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. Just as before, happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. No more sailing, so long sailing, bye-bye sailing.
Inkstead, CITR 101.9 FM. That was Bobby Darin with Beyond the Sea, and Kyle and I are joined by the talented Mark Kalisniko to discuss your many works. Hello, Mark.
Hi.
Bobby Darin, tragic story, eh?
Oh, yes, yes, but very inspiring, though. I mean, he's one of the great... I just love his sound. His sound is so good. Also very talented, the way he would start with rock and roll first, like with Splish Splash and all that, and then went into the standards, and then went into more the peace kind, or not peace, but, you know, the sort of, what's the word I'm looking for at that time?
Pseudo-folk.
Yeah, folk, yes, exactly, of the early 70s before he passed away.
Well, I recommend the movie, once again. It was enjoyable.
I'll take a look at it. I will.
So we were just about to start getting into post-school, where you went to, from what sounds like, a pretty excellent art school.
It was, yes.
And highly recommended by you for anyone that's in California who feels like journeying to California?
Oh, yeah, I totally would recommend it. Anybody who's interested, and then not just for animation, I'll recommend it for anybody who's in, because our alumni is like Ed Harris, Don Cheadle, for actors. They're alumni of the school, too. So the school's very well known, and its music school is good. Everything is excellent. So I would recommend it to any artist who, but it's a private school. That's the only thing it costs a pretty penny.
An arm and a leg.
Yes.
So, from school, did you go directly into the animation, just like
yes,
do the...
Yes, I did. I was very, very fortunate. I was hired into the layout department at Disney in 1985, just as I graduated. So, yes, I was extraordinarily fortunate, because actually the animation business at that time was sort of in a slump, and they weren't hiring that much. But luckily, myself, my wife, and a friend of ours all got hired right out of school, so we were very lucky.
Wow. Good timing.
Yeah, very good timing.
And then
yes,
I guess animation went through a big boom after that. For you, was that a lifelong thing where you're like, wow, I've done what I wanted?
Yeah, actually, yes. Yes, it was. I mean, as well as I like comic books, I did like animation, and I did like Disney a lot. And I mean, I said earlier, I was a big fan of Donald Duck and reading Karl Barks and all that stuff. And so to work at Disney was a big thrill. You know, it was just very, very exciting. And it's, you know, just part of just very interesting job. I mean, it was just something that was very unique, and so I was quite fortunate to be able to work there.
Now, have you done any other animations for any other companies since?
Only other, I basically Disney? Was working on and off with Disney for about 15 years until finally the computer took over, and then that's about where it ended for me. But I did work for about 10 months at Filmation Studios, and we worked on a feature there for that time. That was also interesting because Filmation was also more a down and dirty place. Like, we got to get it done. So it was a different way to look at animation, and it was another great education. I mean, I have to admit, it's very interesting. Just, and also the people you meet is some very interesting people I've met, and very inspiring, very very artistic and creative people.
It's pretty interesting how computers have just taken over as an industry. We have a friend in town, local comic artist Rebecca Dart, and she works in an animation studio, and she's the only one there with a drawing table.
Is that right?
Yeah, everyone else is on computers, and now she has a computer too, I think, but still, like...
Yeah, I've heard that a fellow I know was working over at, was it Blue Sky that does the Ice Age films? I think it's called Blue Sky, something like that. I forget the studio's name. He told me, too, the same thing. He was the only one who could have a pencil scratching while everybody else was on the keyboard. So,
clickety-clack.
So yeah, it's very interesting how it is now. It's very interesting.
It strikes me as a little like the computer animation. It's a different beast, almost like as far as like as a viewer watching it. It's a little colder.
I do agree with that. And also, I look at the beauty of the original 2D is that you really, the artist is putting his heart and soul. When you see these animated characters work, and when they're animated well, oh, it's gorgeous. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous to see. And when I was working in the business and seeing a lot of these people that I worked with, then some of the work was just extraordinary. I can remember one fellow, actually another fellow Canadian, a guy named Duncan Marjorie Banks. He did the Sebastian the Crab in Mermaid. Oh, it was just beautiful to see. And I mean, he even gave me some rough sketches of his, and it was just the pencil line, the way art would work, the way it gives the personality of the artist. Now with the computer, you know, maybe you know the artist is there, but it doesn't feel like it to me. You know, I just don't see it myself. You know,
it seems more like they're creating something for the actor's dialogue than about animation.
Yes, it's just that it feels like it's too fluid. It doesn't feel like there's a feeling of the pencil. I remember another time on. I worked on Great Mouse Detective. That was the first film, and there's a really famous animator, Glenn Keane, and he did this Ratigan, the big rat, and he drew it with his big pencil. And the sketch, this was just the rough animation. It was amazing to look at. I mean, you just sat there, and the power of his pencil, it's just wild. It's just, it really is extraordinary artwork, and no matter what, I miss that, because... But like I said, I will put this down that with 3D, I have never worked with it, so I don't know. I'm sure that you still see the artist in those in his beginning preliminary sketches. But then once the computer takes over, I don't know. You know, I'm sure it's a different thing.
Well, aren't there still films being done in the old style?
Well, my wife actually just finished working on Curious George, so she was able to do 2D, and she's actually working in another company right now doing 2D, so there is a few places still left, yeah, so they're still doing some.
And there's a lot of art houses in, I think, in Japan still doing some.
I wouldn't know, but...
I'm not an animation expert by far. And I think, wasn't Pyongyang have a lot of stuff about 2D animation in it? Isn't that why he went
there? Well, a lot of work from North America is sent to places like Korea to be fully animated.
Oh, yes, that's very common practice. Korea, China, and now with computer, even by computer, they're sending stuff to India and places like that. So
technology makes things cheaper and easier, I guess.
Exactly.
But not necessarily better.
Not necessarily better.
Yes.
I didn't throw in that last part. So now we'll get into Alex.
Yes.
Alex being the first venture. I'm curious, why wait till, I guess, this... When the collection just came out recently.
Yes, it did. It just came out this year.
Why wait 12 years to collect it?
You know what? That's a question you have to ask my publisher. Actually, I think it was just because I started working on other books, and I was getting them out at a pretty good speed. But now my new book is taking quite a long time. It's been a very long time between Mail Order Bride and my new book. And so the publisher and I were talking about it, and they said, well, you know what? This might be a good chance to compile it. and bring it out. So that way it gives a little bit of a breather, it gives me a new book, and yet it still gives me some breathing time to finish up the one that I'm working on right now.
Well, with the immense popularity of things, people preferring to wait for the trades, as so the phrase goes, now is a better time than before, I guess. Have you gotten much, like, renewed interest because of Alex?
Right now, I mean, I appreciate you guys interviewing me, but I haven't heard much. But then again, I really don't, you know, I don't go on the internet and look around. So I really don't know. I mean, I appreciate you two interviewing me. That's wonderful. So in a way, just by you two, there is renewed interest. I'll say that. Yeah.
All right.
Well, I picked up my Alex's when they first came out in '94.
Oh, the books, just the original comic books.
I have the original comic books right here.
Colin's old school.
Yeah. I can remember picking up Alex off the comics rack, knowing nothing about it, and flipping through it, and it took me, like, I don't know, seconds to think, this is British Columbia. I mean, I didn't see any flags or anything, but I just saw this. This is somewhere in the interior, and I was kind of blown away by that because I honestly hadn't heard of you before.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that was my first big series. Before that, I did a short called a little short comic for a short lived magazine called Pictopia for Fantagraphics called Adolf Hears a Who.
You're in Pictopia?
Oh, you remember that one?
I've got the Pictopia. Both of us have the Pictopias, it sounds like, and I didn't know you had something in there.
Yeah, the very first Pictopia, number one, the color insert in there is Adolf Hears a Who. That's mine.
Wow. I'm going to check that out when I get home. That was a great series. I had Dave Cooper, Chris Ware.
Yeah, it was very exciting. I had a lot of great artists in there. It was very exciting. And then after that, I did a short one, just one book, I forget how many pages it was, called SOS, about a little girl on a raft with a shark harassing her. And that was my first. And then after that, it was Alex.
I tried to find SOS because it was listed on the Fantagraphics website. Mm. I probably could have ordered it, but I was just hounding my local retailers, and I couldn't track it down.
Yeah, I think Fantagraphics would be probably the only place you can get it. It's pretty well gone. So,
how long had you left Trail by the time you did Alex?
I left Trail in 81. I started Alex, basically 10 years. I started Alex in 91.
So most of this is done from memory?
Oh, yes, yeah. It was, I went to school, and then I was working, and then once, I got settled with work, and maybe I'll be honest to say I wanted to try something different, then I started writing the comic books, and then that's how it came about. And I went home for summer once to visit my family, and I was looking at Trail, and Trail's a very unique city. It's very interesting, and you know, with the smelter and the smokestacks and all that, and the way the houses are set up in the hills, and it's very artistic looking. And so I just was, I started daydreaming the idea of creating a character, and then also by taking the dog, which was based on one of my child stories, I thought it'd be interesting to make him into a total adult setting. You know, take basically this thing I created from childhood, and make it now into an adult character. So it just sort of came together, and then I just started writing it. I just started writing the story, and then started drawing it in 91.
Now, why a dog head? Why anthropomorphize?
Basically, the idea is, first of all, because my original character was a dog, so I thought it'd be kind of fun. But secondly, it's also just the idea of alienation. I wanted to make it seem like he's really alien to everybody. Though the point, really, they don't really know him as a dog. Maybe I should just took it this way. He feels alien to everybody else. So in a way, it's sort of like, you know, he's a dog. Even though I think with everybody else, they don't really view him as a dog, you know what I mean? But he views himself that way.
So it's kind of like in Quantum Leap when the guy doesn't know what he looks like until
I guess sort of in a way.
That's a bad equation.
You can get away with stuff like that.
Colin's giving me a mean look for that question.
I'm sorry, with the last part?
Colin didn't like the Quantum Leap part.
It just mystified me.
But yeah, so that was the point. It was the point that I wanted the idea of this character sort of standing apart. That he is, you know, no matter what, you'll see Alex in a crowd. He's the alien, alien, you know, he's the loner, he's the one who's sort of always standing out, but yet not fitting in, that kind of thing. So that's why I used the dog.
Now, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but taking the Alex as a child, or as something you created as a young person, and then turning him into a really disheveled alcoholic, is that kind of more feeding to Alex's loss of innocence?
In a way, I guess it is. It's the idea that it's like when I was young, you know, my idea of comics was like Karl Barks and that kind of stuff and Dennis the Menace and that. And then gradually as I, you know, like I said, the Bukowski influence and you know, CalArts and, you know, and also working and finding out, well, you know, I want to do something else. This isn't exactly what I want to do. I don't want to work at Disney forever. I want to try something else. So gradually, you know, life comes in. So you go, okay, why not? I'll take this character that I created and I'll make him into now more adult-oriented. Let's change him. Let's make him a drunk. Let's make him angry and confused and see what happens. And extraordinarily antisocial. And see what this character that was originally this, you know, adventurer comic book for a kid becomes now a very, you know, sort of, you know, just very mellow, very dark comic book for adults.
It's such a sad read at the end, because throughout it he's dealing with his issues and he's identifying his issues, and when he builds up courage, things get in the way of him trying, like calling his friend, wanting to make him dinner to make up for being a jerk.
Right, right.
You know, having a date with a cute girl downstairs, and then what happens to him after that. It's just it's such a neat use of tragedy. I guess. And is that something that is going to be continuing? Is it the hard done by?
It is. I like the idea of that things never work out the way you think they're going to work, you know? So it's, I've always found that with life, that you expect something, and then when you do it, you go, well, gee whiz, that didn't work as well as I expected. But then also there's opposite, too. Sometimes you'll go and do something you don't expect anything, and it'll work out very well. But I like the sort of darkness of that with Alex, is the idea that, yeah, there's always going to be something sort of always, stopping him, or at least making him pause, maybe is a good word for it, you know?
One thing I quite enjoy about that is that he doesn't seem to lament on things getting in his way. He's just unhappy, period.
I think it's because part of the thing is just an acceptance. But then again, you notice he gets angry pretty quick, though.
Yeah.
I mean, now that's the part, too, especially with the artwork. Artwork or people from his past. So he does, he maybe doesn't lament, but he reacts. He becomes very explosive, you know. So, and then also self-abusive. He like the way he smashes himself around and then later on goes back to the booze, too. So in a way, maybe he's not lamenting, but he's doing a lot of other damage, too. So he's quite self-destructive in that sense.
Well, other than the booze, I can relate. I mean, the one scene where he can't find his brush, his inking brush, that just disappears off the table, I can well understand that.
Oh, yeah, well, it's happened countless times, and it's very frustrating because you're ready to go, and where is it? And you actually think it's like a conspiracy, almost like, you know, where did it go? Where did it go? And then you start tearing everything apart.
The paintbrush gnomes have spirited away.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm going to take a quick break and play another song.
Okay, cool.
I have picked out Corcovado.
Oh,
by Barissa Monte and Tom Jobin. And then I just want to ask a couple questions about that song after.
Okay, very good.
We play it. Thanks, that's CHR 101.9. Keep listening for more Mark Kalasniko.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado. Oh, how lovely. Esse amor, uma canção pra fazer feliz a quem se ama. Muita calma pra pensar e ter tempo pra sonhar. Da janela vê seu Corcovado, o Redentor, que lindo. quero a vida sempre assim, com você perto de mim, até o apagar da velha chama. E eu que era triste, descrente desse mundo, ao encontrar você eu conheci o que é felicidade, meu amor.
At CITR 101.9 FM. It's about 3:15 here. I've got Mark Kalesniko on the air with us. Was that the right song, Mark?
Oh, I love that song. That's actually one of my personal favorites of Antonio Carlos Jobim. It's wonderful. And actually, what's funny is Fantagraphics, I did a series in their comics journal where they do little short comics, and any artist who wanted to put a story in, and I did a two-pager called Corbocado.
We have it here.
That was the reason for my selection. I was going to ask you about that. It's a warm-hearted Alex tale.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Yeah, well, it's one of peace. So he's just sitting there with his standing with his Jack Daniels and watching the neighborhood go by.
Now, does that one take place in L.A.?
Yeah, that's okay. Actually an L.A. one, yeah.
So it's a pre-Alex, post-Pete duel.
Yeah, exactly.
Midway.
Well, I think the thing is, it's sort of funny, because with the new one I'm doing, it's also in L.A., but it's sort of like it really won't be a pre-Alex, because my time clock is different in this. So Alex is like 91, but the new one I'm doing will be 96. So I guess we're going to have to just put him in different time zones without worrying about connecting them.
Well, it's comics. It's another dimension.
Exactly, exactly.
Superman spun the Earth backwards, and that's where he is.
Exactly, exactly.
Mail Order Bride,
yes.
Your most recent book, and the one that I think has been getting the most amount of attention.
Yes, yes.
Very strong, very powerful piece of work. Yeah, wow.
Well, thank you.
The former host of the show, Robin Fisher, speaks highly of it. It's one of her favorite books of all time.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
You have some big fans up here in Vancouver if you ever come back to visit Vancouver.
Nice here. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
So let's ask some questions about what, you know, it's a non-Alex story, so here's something completely different.
Yes.
But still similar in the sadness and characters dealing with personal heavy issues.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, set in Bandini?
Yeah, Bandini. Bandini,
yeah.
Which is your trail?
Yeah, the trail's the inspiration, but Bandini is the town.
Yeah. What was some of the driving force of creating this piece of work? Because this must have taken some time. It's what?
Oh, it did. It did
almost 300 pages.
Yeah, it took quite a bit of time. Yeah, it was. It's basically, see, my wife is Asian American, and so it was sort of like based on just, you know, conversations and, you know, stories we've always talked about and things, and then gradually I started to build this story around this idea of just stereotypes. And the thing is, not only just stereotypes of Asian Americans, or maybe if we're, you know, because it's set in Canada, Asian Canadians, but also even the stereotypes of the geek, of the comic book owner, the guy who loves to collect things, because I wanted to sort of show both sides, you know, show that stereotypes sometimes are there and sometimes aren't there. And so that was sort of the basic theme, is to explore both sides.
I almost see it as a stereotype of expectations.
Yes, exactly. Well, exactly, because they both expect something and neither get it, and that's where the conflict comes in.
Now, one of the striking things was the development of Kyung. Is that
yes.
the right way to pronounce? Of Kyung's character in the book is that it's so well rendered that her character just develops throughout the thing of like her first, and there's so much mystery to her too. And that's something I also noticed with Alex, is mystery seems to be a big part of your work. There's a lot more happening than we know, and we know a lot more is happening, and it kind of entices us to keep reading. But the development of Kyung, when you worked through the process of creating this book, did you kind of have a rough idea of how the whole thing was going to work out? Were things changing when you're like, okay, this isn't real, this, you know, get more kind of realistic?
Yeah, I think it's funny because it was so long ago. That book, I started that book in 96, but I started writing it about 2 years before. And I sort of created this character out of people I had met, and then also like with, you know, my wife and how, you know, she views things, and then started just building. And my wife's not a mail order bride, so I added that part in. Adding this part of the expectation, and also to just the basic stereotype. I mean, it is the mail order bride thing is very stereotypical, kind of like, you know, you're getting a little slave. And so gradually I built that in. And then as the character progressed, I guess, yeah, I wanted to reach that idea of, that she is not this, she is something else. But then also to show that she still has her weaknesses, that she is not just, you know, at the end I am woman and, you know, marches out and does her own thing. But she is actually still somebody who is a frightened person. And basically, you know, at the end of the book, you know, is that, you know, she's there.
Yeah.
She's still going to stay. She's not going anywhere, you know. So that's sort of what I wanted to do. And I do like the idea of realism. I want it to be realistic. I don't like with the end of Alex too, I sort of build up to this sort of happy ending at the end and then bang, I stop. I it's my idea that there's always things stopping you. There's always a pause. Life just works that way. It's always doing something that's making you think a different way.
Did you do a lot of research into the whole issue of mail order brides? I mean,
actually,
to me,
not
the
really. No. It was funny. It was just that what I would do is I actually sort of kept it. I kept myself sort of ignorant of the business. I really didn't go and look and figure out how mail order. Cause I didn't want anything to interfere that would, you know, get my story, because, you know, I don't deal with, you know, how she gets her immigration papers, you know what I mean? I just don't care. I just wanted to get right to the story. So I just sort of basically used it as a vehicle to get her there, and then left it. You know, that was, I didn't want any other details to get in the way.
It was just more of an exploration of character and kind of almost a little bit of sociology in there.
Yes, yes.
Of, crisis of identity.
Exactly. And also too, there's even like the part too with the Eve character too, that, you know, I wanted to create this sort of what she would thought was a perfect woman, but, you know, again, she doesn't fit either. You know, again, she has her problems, and for the Kyung character, she is disappointed at the end because Eve also doesn't live up to the expectation that she's first thought by coming to Canada and moving in with this fellow would do something. When that didn't work, she thought, okay, maybe Eve will do something, and that doesn't work. You know, she's always hoping that somebody else will sort of, in a way, maybe even try to save her or guide her in another way, and of course, she has to save herself.
Yeah.
She basically really doesn't. You know?
Are there any current comics or creators that are kind of influencing you or, like, giving you new ideas?
Right now, I'm going to be honest, I feel really bad. I haven't really been following too much because I've been so concentrating on my own book that I haven't been to a comic book store in ages. And I feel so bad because,
you know,
I should. As always, Art Spiegelman has been a big influence since Mouse, and I really enjoy his. And then luckily, just this year down here at the... in Los Angeles, they had a show of comic book art, and it was really inspiring to see some. And they had, I was, you know, looking at Chris Ware's work, which was just gorgeous. It was just beautiful and very inspiring. But I have to get back in. I apologize. It's I have not been keeping up with the current artists, and I'm sure there's a whole host of really wonderful work out there.
Colin has a question, I think.
Oh, I was just wondering if you ever hear from the people in Trail and what they think of your portrayal.
Actually, no, I don't. I have a very strong feeling, except for my family, no one else really knows it exists. You know, so I think yeah, basically no. Yeah, it's just as long, just my parents and my little brother, and that's about it. So no one. I don't think even people know it, it exists at all.
You got to get out more and do some signing.
Oh, I know, I got to. The thing is that, well, again, like my character, I sort of hunker down and it's a little antisocial, but I got to do some signings and stuff. Especially with the nice response from your show here, I got to come up to Vancouver just to come over and see you guys, just to say thanks. You know, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Well, we very much appreciate the chance of getting to speak with you, because, like I said, I'm a big fan, Colin's a big fan, and Robin Fisher, who used to do the show, she was very jealous of this. She had, I think, bugged Gary Groth years ago, and he said that you're a little reclusive.
Yes. Yeah, I am reclusive. Yes, I am. But I do. I really appreciate this chance to be able to speak like this. This is wonderful. And I mean, for an hour, this is the quickest hour I've ever experienced. It's just like you just shot by. It's just wonderful.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you very much. Thank you both, and I appreciate it. And then also good luck with this, with your show here. It's a wonderful show.
Oh, well, I hope you get a chance to listen to some of our other shows.
Actually, I didn't get a chance to because I don't know how to use my computer to do the radio. I'm still trying to figure that out, so I apologize. But as soon as I figure that mystery out, I will be listening. So,
we do have, I'll send you the link because your show will be up for downloading soon. I have a website where people can download our interviews and just listen to them at their leisure.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I'll send you the link, and your show will be up there probably within the next couple of days.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that, and I just got to figure out how to download it.
There's instructions on the
screen. Very ignorant of computers.
Maybe I'll send you a disc with some interviews.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. I'd surely appreciate that.
That's no problem. Thank you very much, Mark.
Well, thank you both very much. I really appreciate this.
Okay, bye.
Good talking with you.
Bye. That was Mark Kalasniko, very talented creator of Mail Order Bride, Alex, Why Did Pete Duell Kill Himself, and the
Mail Order Bride.
I said Mail Order Bride first, and I was going to make a reference to SOS of being very hard to find. Mm. But you know what? I'm going to get my local comic store to order it for me, or maybe just Hound Founder Graphics or something. That was great.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of Mark stuff. Check it out. Mail Order Bride, Alex, Why Pete Duell Kill Himself. All excellent books. You can find them at most good comic stores. Well, at the good comic stores. Any comic store that doesn't carry it isn't good. I'll give my three references right now. Lucky's on Main might. The RX Comics definitely will. And Sophia's books on Hastings downtown definitely will.
Comic shop?
Possibly. I'm not going to hold my breath at the comic shop. I hope so. But Comic Barn, Golden Age, don't even bother. Did I say that?
No, I said that. No, I didn't hear anything.
Colin didn't hear anything. No. La, la, la. Next week, I will not be here. Robin K will be doing a week to fill in for me. I have a paper due on Friday, so I got to take a day off, considering the show's on Thursdays, and just bunker down on the paper and just get those last-minute edits. So wish me luck on the paper, people. The week after that will be Linda Medley, be joined by Robin Fisher. She is moving to Ontario.
Quebec.
Ontario, then Quebec. Montreal. She'll be in Ontario for a week. There we go. I'm not wrong. So those of you that know Robin Fisher, go see her at Arx Comics on Saturday and say bye. And listen on the 29th when Robin and I will be interviewing Linda Medley. The week after that will be Filth Hole, the webcomic created by Fred Grissom and Jamie D. Galley. And Fred is also the creator of Hate Song, a favorite of mine.
And we have for podcasting, for downloading as podcast now, we have the Evan Dorkin and the Spain Rodriguez
interview. Every interview up till this week.
Yes.
Is up www.crowncommission.com/inkstuds. Even if you go to crowncommission.com, it'll be there. They're all there. Spain, Evan Dorkin, Alex Toth tribute, Seth, Bob Fingerman, Mary Fleener.
The Muhammad Cartoon Crisis episode.
Many great interviews. The Evan Dorkin one makes me laugh. Wahaha. You can hear him ask Colin about hats. If you see Colin, ask him why he asked him about hats. Oh, and then what else we got next month? I just keep prattling on. Next month, we also have Pete Bagg. Woo! Creator of Hate, Neat Stuff. Oh,
that's for sure now?
Yeah.
Cool.
Got a reply from Pete. I just have to pick a date and tell him. James Kochelka will be on sometime. Possibly Renee French. Gareth Goydan next month, hopefully, who does Magic Teeth. And some more stuff I'm not ready to say yet. Because you know what? I'm not ready to say it. And just before we go, let's see, is that working? Oh, it's not working.
What's not working?
There we go.
What the hell is that?
That's from the Super Friends.
What is the Super Friends?
Okay, people who know Super Friends, have a talk with Colin. Colin doesn't know what the Super Friends are. Super Friends are fabulous.
I think it's after my time.
They're the best in the world. They're the greatest. This thing is taking forever to go. Just play. There we go.
Is Mark Kalasniko a Super Friend?
Will that even work? I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. I think he's a super artist, though. Super guy. Also, in an issue of Pictopia, you can find it and find comic stores that carry old stuff. Up next, we got Rhymes and Reasons. I don't see the boys yet, but they should be here somewhere. What? And then we got some more shows after that. I forget what's on after that. A bunch of stuff. Oh, Saturday. That's what I got to mention. Comic Jam. Jolly Alderman, 8 o'clock. And later, I will be there possibly having a couple beers and maybe doing something annoying, because I don't draw, but I like comics, as should you. And here, let's show off with Chet Baker, Easy Living.
Nothing in life but you. I never regret the years I'm giving. They're easy to give. When you're in love, I'm happy to do whatever I do for you. For you. Maybe
it's fine. People say you roomie with one wave of your hand. Darling, it's grand. They just don't understand. Living easy to live when you're in love, and I'm so in love. There's nothing in life but you. Nothing in life but you.